Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. It's time to collaborate. Welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you this wonderful Thursday evening. And if you're a fan of the show, then you know that what we do here on a Thursday at 8 o'clock is that we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And tonight, as always, I'm going to ask you to take a virtual trip with me to the island. Because when we get together on a Thursday, what we do is chill. But on the island, we say, no problem, man. We get in our favorite chairs, which could be a hammock, a rocking chair, just laying on the sand, on top of the roof, or driving in our cars, because we know the trade winds are going to come drifting softly across our face. So tonight, we're going to relax and forget about the cares of the world and the week, because as soon as we take our trip, we're going to start the celebration, or continue, I should say, the celebration. So, welcome again, ladies and gentlemen, and I see we have lots of callers in tonight, and that could be because we have a very special guest. So, without any further ado, I have a couple of announcements, and then I am going to welcome our special guest this evening. So, what I'd like to tell you is that if you are on my mailing list, you will know that we're still celebrating not only the 50th anniversary, but of course, our wonderful athletes. So we say, what a celebration. And if you have been to, if you just have been visiting Jamaica, or if you're from Jamaica, you know how we can party. So the party goes on and on. So we're going to be sort of in a celebrating mood tonight, because we know that we have a living legend, and in Mr. Bolt, of course, and also for the people who might not have been watching, I don't know if there's anyone on the planet that wasn't, but you already know that Jamaica had 12 medals, 4 gold, 4 silver, and 4 bronze. And just for the record, I was checking up on, you know, the athletes and their earnings, and I'm going to throw it out there. I suppose someone might beat me to it, but I'd like during our sidebars, if anyone knows what Eustain Bolt is expected to earn for the next 12 months, because I just think it's mind-boggling. Now, and of course he deserves it. But if you are new to the show, I'd like to invite you to listen, go back in the archives and listen to the show we did about Arthur Wint, who happened to be the first gold medalist for Jamaica in 1948. And I just really want to say, you know, he set such an example. Not only was he disciplined, a wonderful citizen, but and in those days, I'm sure that there was not any monetary value to the to getting a gold medal. I don't know. I haven't researched that. But he went on to become, he was a pilot. He went on to become a doctor who served his community so well. So I still want to be able to remind people that, you know, from long ago, we have had wonderful athletes and all sorts of Jamaicans who have really set the bar high for the next generation. So I am hoping that Eustain and all the both male and female athletes will continue to do well and also be examples for the next generation. So enough of that. For those who might come by later on, I want to read the introduction to you, because you may not be on my list. If you'd like to get on my list, please go to www.backyardlabrish.com and just send me a little note that you'd like to be added. I only send out information of the upcoming shows, so I send nothing else out to the list, so you don't have to be afraid of being spammed. And I just want to take a few minutes for some of the new listeners that might not know the purpose of Backyard Labrish. But a few years ago, I think it was 07, I took a trip to Europe. And I stayed in a bed and breakfast in Madrid. And I was so impressed. It was in the home of a senior citizen. And they were so into their culture. I was really, really impressed. Not only that, they were a lot more into the internet than I imagined, you know, because here in America we just think that, well, not me really, but most people just think America is the world and nothing is happening anywhere else. But this was, I would say, a mid-income family, and they were in their 70s, and both the man and the woman were all over the internet. They told me they just loved it. They could get so much information, and they used it for this and they used it for that. And they said, look, I can look up about your culture. And they Googled Jamaican culture, and I'm looking there. And they clicked on a website, and I was reading things I didn't understand, because I had left Jamaica in 1959, and I said, oh, my God, this is a new world. I couldn't even read what I was, you know, it's a different kind of patois. So I was unable to read it. Then I decided to search if there was any information about the period that I grew up in, which was between the 30s and the 50s. And there wasn't any. And I said, no, this is not right. Because I know there's a lot of us floating all over the world. So we need to really embrace this technology and let the world know something about the world we grew up in. Not that there's anything wrong with what Jamaica is now, but I think that getting the stories of how life was from the people who lived it makes it a lot more authentic than somebody else writing about it. So I would like to invite some of the listeners on the line to consider sharing with us perhaps things about the culture they grew up in that could be useful in some way, or just leaving a memory that their children or grandchildren or somebody else's children can learn from the people who lived it. So with that said, I would like to tell you about our special guest this evening. Our special guest this evening is Mr. Carl MacDonald, who is a former foreign press representative for Jamaica at several athletic events back in the day. He's a retired senior and has had an award-winning career as a photographer, journalist, and graphic artist in Jamaica, Canada, and the United States, where he now resides. His work and achievement has been featured in several publications, including the New York Times, Ebony, Jet, and the Daily Gleaner. His passion for photography, music, and helping others still keeps him involved and invested in living life to its fullest. So I would like for you all to join me as I welcome Carl, and he'll be sharing how growing up in Jamaica prepared him for his fulfilling career and how he is now serving his community. So with that, I would like to open up the mic. Where are you? Okay, I think I can find you. Good evening. This is Margaret, and who do I have?
This is Carl.
Welcome to the backyard.
Yes, it was a crystal clear morning as the orange glow of the rising sun flickered across Kingston Harbor in Jamaica. A shrill cry could be heard in the maternity ward of the Victoria Jubilee Hospital in Kingston as little Carl made his entrance into the world.
Welcome!
I was the firstborn son to my parents after my two sisters preceded me. And my feeling is that there must have been great joy in that home after dealing with two girls. Of course, a few years later, my two brothers, Skipworth and David, followed and completed the family.
Wonderful. No. Would you mind sharing the names of your parents?
And David MacDonald was my father, David E. MacDonald, and Cicelyn Spencer MacDonald. She was Spencer and Cicelyn MacDonald.
Great, great, great. I noticed that you tell us about, and incidentally, when you said Jubilee, I remember that, you know, from growing up in Jamaica, too, in Kingston. And as I was thinking about it today, I said, you know, just like Jubilee was a part of Kingston Public Hospital, I can't remember. Do you? Well, you wouldn't remember when you were born, but I mean, do you remember afterwards if it was part of KPH?
Yes, it was. It was. But they were more a maternity section.
Yeah, it was strictly a maternity, I know. But
yes.
I just thought of how appropriate the name was. Jubilee,
yes.
As in being jubilant at the birth of the babies.
Correct.
Yes, so you are right. There was a lot of jubilation at Jubilee when you were born.
Yes, certainly. And more so at home.
I know. First boy after two girls.
The prince had arrived.
And I know Papa must have been happy.
Yes. Now, we grew up in a community of caring families who shared in the protection and counsel of the children, even when they were away from home on the streets. And, you know, for example, if you're out on the street and you're having a little fight with your friend, you'd be surprised by the time you got home, the news was already there.
And they didn't have cell phones.
No. But the punishment was waiting.
Yes. And I know the new generation will perhaps find that hard to understand.
That's right. And it was corporal, too.
Right.
Corporal
so
punishment.
Tell us about your early school days. Were you homeschooled? Where did you go to school?
But most of my early education was from private teachers, and then I advanced. Well, all of my siblings advanced to our first elementary school at Micro Practicing School, which is a division of Micro Colleges for Teachers. And because my mother was an advocate for good education, and she was a teacher also, we were also sent to private summer classes.
Now, where did your mother teach at that time?
Well, she actually taught in the public school system, and she also eventually established her own school in a small town called Newtown.
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 Is that like in St. Andrew or in Kingston?
In Kingston.
I got you. You know, it's not funny. I was born and raised in Kingston, and I never heard of that town.
Yeah, well, it's very near to Jonestown.
Ah, yeah, I hear that. I know Jonestown, or I know of Jonestown. But I just want to say, you know, it's so great when we talk to other Jamaicans, because most foreigners believe because the island is so small that everybody knows everybody. And I try to tell people on the show, because, you know, a lot of foreigners come by and listen to the show, too, that especially when we were growing up, if you lived in Kingston, you did not necessarily know what was happening in Montego Bay or in St. Thomas, which is like the other ends of the island. So, you perhaps were not necessarily having the identical same customs in the homes or, you know, in the community.
That's right.
Yes, yes, yes. So but were both your parents from Kingston? They were Kingstonians?
Yes, as far as I knew.
No, to me that is sort of unusual, because I mentioned on many of the shows that for me, my father passed away when I was quite young. But the only country I went to when I was growing up was my mother's country, because she was, and country for the foreigners means interior part of Jamaica, was Westmoreland, Savlamar, because that's where my mom was from. You know, I never knew Montego Bay until I went back to Jamaica after I left in 59. So, you know, although the place was small, it was very big to us.
But I was fortunate to learn a few of the other parishes of the country because of the nature of my work as a news reporter.
Oh yes, but as a youngster growing up, you were mainly in Kingston.
Mainly in Kingston. We never really left Kingston. We went on further into the beaches and the botanical gardens and so on of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about what we really stayed in Kingston. And there were times when I remembered Christmas time, Christmas morning, we would take the boat. They have a special boat that took the people out into the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And
Carg, what year are we talking about here now? Help us out.
Oh, my. We're going back into, I would guess, into the 40s.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, we had one of those, a very bad accident on one of those Christmas mornings when the boat capsized. What happened? Someone fell out of the boat in the water, and then on one, all the people moved to that side where the
mm-hmm.
child fell. And, of course, with that imbalance in the boat capsized, and a lot of people died.
Really?
Oh, yes.
I do Pieces of the Past. That is a series of documentation that Dr. Tortella did for her thesis. And I don't remember seeing that story. She has a lot of fabulous stories that I've shared, and they're all on the archives. But I never saw one about a boat accident.
Yes, and they even made a song about the Zephyr. That's the name of the boat, how it capsized and so on. I won't attempt to sing, do any singing, because you may drive away your guests.
Well, you never know. You know, we might turn into an American Idol or Jamaican Idol for that matter, and you might start giving all the other singers a little competition.
No, I'm not that daring.
All right. Well, I just want to take a minute to remind the listeners that this is elaborate, so we're very casual. It's not CNN or Fox or, you know, ABC. We're here when we get together in the backyard, we really want to recapture some of the memories of how we grew up, because like Jamaica, you know, things have changed dramatically, as they have in many parts of the world. However, we tend to, sometimes the older we get is the more we remember things that we did when we were younger.
Right.
So having this conversation, I believe, and Carl, if you don't mind, if I ask you some questions about names and places.
Not at all. I'll do my best.
Coming on later to try to identify, you know what I mean, with where and what we're talking about. So let me ask you this. Did you know anyone on the boat when they had this accident?
No, I was a child at the time when that incident took place. And all I knew was my immediate family, my father, and I know I was there, and there were two other members of the family who were on the boat.
I got you. Now, you mentioned that your mom was a teacher. What did your father do?
My father was a sheet metal worker. He did things like, for example, the gutters, and the drainage from buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And in that period of time, they had the American stove where we had to have the stove pipes going through the wall to get the smoke and the foul air out of the kitchen.
Oh, yes.
He made things like that.
Chimney.
And
yes.
And also like the baking tins or cans for the bakery who make all these, like Sterich,
uh-huh,
and some of the big well-known bakeries. He made all of the containers in which they put the flour to make the bread and so on.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So when did you start to have a love for photography?
Well, interestingly, to go back briefly to my education, I was accepted after a very rigorous entrance examination at the Kingston Technical School.
Uh-huh.
And there was a science club there, which I became a member of. And they had a few demonstrations on how films were developed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was intrigued by the process. And I started to take my little Kodak Brownie camera and photograph everything and people around me.
Wow.
What
age group were you in now? What age are we?
We're talking about 13, 14, in that age group.
All right.
It should also be noted that in my time of attendance, Kingston Technical School was a combination of liberal arts and technical training. For example, I was trained in technical drawing, which prepared me for employment as a draftsman at the first stage, and of course leading to architectural drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And
were your instructors, and for the foreigners, this was during the colonial days, right?
Yes.
Were your instructors local instructors, or they were foreigners?
All of the instructors were local teachers, very well trained teachers, teaching us, for example, mathematics at the highest level, like trigonometry, logarithms, algebra, and of course Spanish was also taught as a second language. The headmaster of Kingston Technical School by tradition as a colony. He was brought in from England. And as long as I was there, I've never had a local. We've never had a local headmaster at Tenkul School.
Right. Okay. So you fell in love with photography while you were there.
Yes. Yes.
Uh huh. And then what happened next?
I became, you know, like a real businessman. I remember creating a sample album, which I took on my bicycle, and I went from door to door showing my work and getting customers. And
wow.
Little by little, I evolved.
As a teenager.
Yes, as a teenager.
Wow. In the meantime, what were your sister? Oh, wait, you. How many members are in your family?
There are five of us.
Siblings.
Five of us. There are two girls and three boys.
Okay, gotcha.
In the meantime, they also went to other colleges, which, if they're on the line, they can come and explain a little bit more about the colleges that they attended.
Yeah, but you were the senior of everybody in German.
Well, I was the senior boy.
Right, right. Okay.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And where do we go from there with your photography? Because I know that seems to be your real passion.
Well, eventually I started to work at the Gleaner, the largest newspaper in the West Indies. And little by little, I got involved with... I was actually working as a technician in the lab where we printed all the work of the other photographers. And when it was brought to the editor's notice that I had more than darkroom skills, that I was good at photographing people and so on, he felt that I had the sort of talent that could assist them in photographing, for example, the first tintype beauty contest that was done anywhere in the world, where instead of having just one beauty queen, they had like Miss Ebony, depending on the color.
Oh, yeah, I remember the shades.
Right.
I was reading a blog about that a couple of days ago, where you had the different shades. They all had names.
Yes.
For the foreigners, again, it would be shades of the skin color.
Right. Ebony, mahogany, sandalwood, and so on. And Life magazine did a story on this unique beauty contest, because we felt in Jamaica that it was unfair to pit the beautiful fair-skinned girl against the beautiful black girl, for example.
Uh-huh.
And it went over very well. It got a lot of worldwide coverage.
You remember what year that was? Because I need to go Mr. Google it and see if there's any documentation. And I just want to take a break here to have a little sidebar, because this is why I'm so passionate about what we're doing, because I know that there's so much wonderful information about things that happened in Jamaica that seems to be just lost. Because I don't remember, and, you know, I've been doing a research as long as I've been doing the program, which is like late, early 08, and I don't remember coming across any information about the mahogany. Did it have a name? But I remember it now that you said it.
It was called the 10-type beauty contest.
The 10-type. Okay, well, I'm going to have to research that.
And you know, I participated in that. We went across the country to all the parishes and had local competitions, and whereby we were able to select different girls, and the photographs were published. And they even had some mini competitions where the people were invited to select their choice of each type beauty.
Right. In other words, audience participation, which is the big thing now here, Yeah. I mean, we were ahead of the time down there, wouldn't you say?
I would say so, absolutely.
I love it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know most foreigners think that we were not all that, but we know that we were all that.
We certainly
were. We have been always ahead of the curve.
Well, the impression that people have of Jamaica is that we are one step behind the United States. As a matter of fact, we tend, quite frankly, to imitate all of the good and bad habits of the American way of life. But we have been innovators, and it's good that you're able to identify that Usain Bolt, while he's a great athlete.
However you pronounce it.
His gold medal was not the first. Right.
Not the first gold medalist.
Not the first gold medal at all.
He's first in so many other things, though. But there were a couple of articles on mostly Yahoo and those other things about, you know, him being the first gold medalist. And I said, where are these people coming from?
Right.
So, you know, the seniors, I'd like to let the listeners and online and those calling in know that I call myself a senior because, but I'm so passionate about the technology and how we can really utilize it to help ourselves. And one of the reasons I'm doing all of this, because as I said, you know, I have three grandsons, and they were all born here. All my children were born here. So my grandchildren are born here. But they're still, I figure, you know, they're going to be looking online for things about their genes, you know, where their grandmother came from. And there would not be a lot of information about the period we grew up in, because, as you know, when we were in school, we were learning mostly about the historical things that happened, you know, when this one did that or whatever, but not about the culture as it was evolving.
That's right.
And because of the research, I have found the historians that are doing some digging and found some marvelous things that were done by Jamaicans like 100 years ago all over the world, not only in Jamaica, but all over the world. So I'd like to take this opportunity to invite some of the new listeners to look in the archives when you have time, because of the technology, all the shows are archived. So at any given moment or whenever you have time, you can go in and select a show that might be of interest to you and listen to that particular show. So back to you, Mr. Carl.
Yes, well, I'd like to go to the point of my parents. My mother, well, both parents, but especially my mother, was very, very dedicated to education. Not as a teacher only, but as a great communicator. And she also dispensed a lot of wisdom to us in poetic form.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I will just recall one of the verses that she would always repeat to us. Play up and play the game. For when the one great scorer comes to write against your name, he'll write not how you won or lost, but how you play the game.
Wonderful.
And then there's another one that I will try this one out. Don't lean on others. Be a man. Stand on footing of your own. Be independent if you can, and cultivate a strong backbone.
I've never heard that one. Those are two new ones for me. We did a show once on memory gems, and we asked, you know, the listeners to contribute. So there's that one. But I never heard those two before.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for sharing. And I'd like to, you know, we're going to take a break later on and ask participants that are listening called in to, if they would like to share something or make a comment or just interact, you'll be getting a chance to do that. So now, how about your dad? How did he influence your growing up?
Well, he was he had a good work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
He was, you know, always rose, you know, in the morning very early, and went to his shop. And of course, one of the first things he did was to read the Gleaner, and be updated on the news. And then he went to work in his shop. He also was very well known in the community as a dynamic leader, and he also had a few people working for him who he was able to teach the trade, and eventually...
Right, apprenticeship.
Apprenticeship, right.
Huh?
And eventually some of them even progressed into setting up their own enterprises, own shops, own old business in the same enterprise.
Oh, for the good old days.
Yes. Huh? And he was a man of time. Whatever the job had to be done, he made sure that he was there on time, and the discipline of starting and finishing the job, delivering the jobs on time, and so on. And I spent a lot of time in that shop, especially during the summer holidays, and I learned a lot about the craft. But even when I went to eventually technical school, where they taught metalwork, woodwork, and so on, I was a step ahead of the class in the metalwork area. And they were surprised that I knew so much. But they didn't know at the time that my father was an expert metal worker.
Right. In these days, they would call it homeschooled. You were being homeschooled, even though you were going to school.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so much of that now is missing from the children growing up. So, It's when we look back, we realize how very fortunate we were, not only to grow up during that period, but to grow up in Jamaica.
Right.
Yeah. So how, I just wanted to ask you this: how were you disciplined? If you did you consider yourself a good kid?
I think so. I mean, I wasn't an angel. But what I can tell you, the punishment was left to my father.
Uh-huh.
And I know that whenever my mom says, "Wait till your father come home,"
uh-huh,
I knew I was going to get it good.
So what did you get?
Oh, well, the good old strap came out.
Ah, was it a belt or a cane?
A belt.
Okay.
A belt, and there was no hesitation. I remembered one time my father was flogging me, and my brother was so sympathetic that I was getting all these whacks, you know, and he says, and my father would say, count the straps, count. And I would say, one, two, and I would stop, and my brother said, "Count, Carl, count number three," and I wouldn't.
So you're calling out your own counts.
Yeah, I started, but then I stopped.
I thought you were going to say your brother wanted to take it for you.
No, well, I wouldn't be surprised.
He wasn't that generous, eh? So what do you remember what you'd be punished for?
No, well, there was one particular incident where I was there working summertime in the shop, and he sent me home for the soldering material. Came in very long sticks, and he used to store them at home, and he sent me to pick up one or two of those sticks of solder, and as I picked them up. And then I met my cousin, who I admired so greatly, and he had this bicycle, and he was going someplace. And, of course, all of a sudden I forgot all about my assignment to take back the soldering iron, I mean, soldering strips to my father. And he put me on the handle of the bicycle and took me down Kingston. You know, we were just riding on the bicycle, going downtown and so on. And hours went by. And eventually I was taken back to the shop and forgot all about this assignment. And my father said, "Carl, where is that thing I sent you for?" And I'm saying, all of a sudden, I said, "My God," to myself. It was totally out of my mind. And he gave me that look and he says, "You go home and prepare for roast and boil."
All right. Which was the strap?
Yeah, which was the strap.
Okay.
And by the time when I got home, I was so scared of the idea that I knew that the flogging was going to be intense.
Uh-huh.
And my mother realized that I was in quite a panic, and then I started to have a fever. And of course, by the time...
Immediately?
No.
Oh, that sounds like it was convenient.
So by the time my dad arrived home, I was having a fever. Talk about roast and boil.
Oh, he said he was going to do what?
Give me roast and boil.
Ah, so boy, you can manifest things fast. I would think. He said the word and you did it.
Yeah.
So you were actually, you joking or you were actually having a fever?
No, I got sick. I got sick. By the time he got home, he found a very sick child, and of course, he couldn't touch me.
That's why I asked. Conveniently sick.
No. Oh, yes.
Oh, all right. So move us up to your, you're now a teenager. You're passionate about photography. So where did you go from there?
Well, the editor of the Gleaner, Mr. Seeley, recognized that I had some potential for covering the news for the newspaper. And when he saw some of my work, my private work, he decided that I would be ideal for doing some of the picture stories that would tell the story of the different things that were happening in the community. For example, what happens when you dial 911?
We had 911 in those days?
Yes, we had all
911. Really? I don't even remember that. That's how old I am.
Oh, yeah.
911?
Oh, yeah.
We didn't have telephones.
Yeah, we eventually...
That's party line, I remember that. You check up the phone and somebody else is talking on it.
That's right.
Huh.
And,
we had 911?
And little things like a boy and his pets, and a love story, a boy meets girl, and things of really human interest.
Uh-huh.
And
do you remember what year we're talking about now? Where are we up to?
We're back in the 50s now.
50s.
You know,
okay.
That was back in about the 50s. And he, after a while, he gave me complete control as to what topics I wanted to illustrate.
And are you saying that you really didn't go to school there in Jamaica to learn photography, right?
No, not at all. I was self-taught.
Okay.
I had periods of working with some of the well-known photography studios, which was more the focus was more on portraiture.
Right, so you were actually self-taught, or
primarily, I was self-taught, yes.
Ah, cool. All right, so move us on now. Where are we in your career? Because I want to get to the point where, you know, we know that you've got several awards, and we want to lead up to that.
Yes, well, we had the first competition that I got in was the news picture of the month, and what we did was we would seek out the different stories of for example, there was a group of soldiers who were coming in from England to train the people in the military camps in Up Park Camp. And as they were unloading at the dock, I went looking for different stories, and I photographed that, and I won. That was one of my first awards of them unloading from the docks. And then we had local competitions between the photographers who had a photographic camera club. And then, little by little, I was used to cover serious stories, like, for example, when there was the arrival of some foreign dignitary from Jamaica, I was sent to the airport to photograph that arrival. I also covered some special events at King's House, where, of course, they had all the special dignitaries that were entertained, were visiting from abroad.
And that time we had an English governor.
Yeah, that time we had an English governor, yes.
Do you remember what his name was?
Well we had, the two that I remember was Sir Hugh Foote.
Uh-huh, Governor Foote, I remember
governor
that,
Foote,
him, that name.
And there was also Huggins.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember that name too. It's funny how your brain can get triggered, you know, like in a conversation like this. So I'm saying that to the seniors, that it's good to talk about the old times, because, you know, you as someone says something, it triggers something in your memory bank.
Right.
And I do remember the names, you know, I don't put a face to them, but I do remember the names. I just wanted to ask this, just for curiosity. Did your father encourage your talent of being able to, or your passion for photography?
Well, I don't think he had any special, except when the name was published in the newspaper and he was proud to say,
yeah,
well,
that
okay.
That made him proud.
Yes.
Because I know sometimes in the old days, you know, parents had, just like they do now, you know, specific things they wanted for their children to do.
Yes, yes.
So I was just curious about that.
Well, my mother, I remember, because she knows that I had this love for the arts, she felt that I should become an architect. Because of course I was very good at drawing, and I was taught technical drawing at technical school. And she encouraged me to do what I was doing, and eventually I started to gain employment around the city in some of the well-known studios, and then again eventually the Gleaner.
Mm-hmm. So you're a big-time photographer now.
Well, no. I mean, at that
gaining
point...
Gaining confidence. You don't remember this is lavish, so I'm just... I'm just teasing you.
I know,
okay?
I know.
You've moved up in the world from photographing the soldiers getting off the thing to being at King's House. That is big times.
Of course.
All right. So during that time, how was socializing in Jamaica, you know, getting together with boys and girls? Because this is, I think that the new generation would be curious about that.
Well,
what did you do for fun?
Well, socializing was not, well, in my family, we were not too much into too much of that kind of...
partying. You weren't partying.
We weren't partying. We went to garden parties, of course.
Yeah.
And we also went on outings where we went to some of the beauty spots of Jamaica, like Castleton Gardens, Hope Gardens. And Hope Gardens turned out to be one of my favorite spots to take the models and photograph them up there. Very scenic place with the backdrop of the blue mountains.
And you did that for the Gleaner Company. It would be interesting to know if some of those photographs are still archived someplace.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yes, I'm sure they are archived somewhere.
Wow.
Yes. Oh, yes. And then to transition, I was prepared to go for advanced training in photography to the United States, and I got my... By then, I got married, my first, and we got the student visas and was ready to take the trip to the United States when I got a call from the editor of Sports Life magazine, and everything was, you know, I was selling out my equipment and I was packing and all that, and he said to me, how about going to Venezuela? And I said, why not? And this was the Central American and Caribbean Games in Caracas.
Ah.
And
where was that?
And that was in, let me see what year, that would be 1958.
Uh-huh.
58. And I was designated as the official photographer of the team that went to Caracas. And, of course, I was the photographer also who took all of the activities. I did my developing of my films at the Venezuelan College. I forget the name of the college now. But
did
they,
you speak any Spanish?
Well, I had 2 years of Spanish at technical school, and, of course, with lack of usage, I had forgotten quite a bit. But while I was down there, I was forced to recall some of the language, and I was able to.
So you could help yourself.
Yeah, I was able to help myself, yes.
Got you. So do you remember any outstanding athletes that were there that you met at the games there, or that was part of the Jamaican team?
Yes, there was people like Barrington Roper. He was well known for swimming.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the water polo team there, and there was a fellow named Lambert, and then we had the track and field stars, these are not well-known names because, again, this was not the big games like the Olympics or the British Empire Games.
Right, right.
But we had competitors from most of the West Indian Islands, including
And
British.
It was your first foreign trip.
That was my first foreign trip.
Oh, great. Now you've really moved up in the world.
And, of course, what people kept saying to me, if you're doing so well in America, just wait till you get to New York.
Ah.
That was a false statement, how great it was going to be.
Ah. So when did you do that?
So as soon as I returned from Caracas, I moved on to New York, and I was confronted with all the silly racism of America. And, of course, I started to work in the industry. And I worked at Life magazine as a technician there. And I covered the New
York. And Life magazine headquarters was in New York. Or
in New York. Yes, in New York.
Okay.
Yes, near the Rockefeller
That's
Center.
A big name.
Yeah, Empire State. No, the Time Life building was right across from Radio City Music Hall in
uh-huh.
Rockefeller Center area. Yeah.
Right, right.
And I was there for a while, and of course I opened my own studio eventually.
In New York?
In Queens, New York, yes. By then I'd bought my own home and so on.
And mostly who were your clientele then? Were you doing like weddings and parties or what?
Yes, we were doing all the basic photography that the average studio did, weddings, passports, any special events. We had contracts with some of the beauty schools where we would photograph the graduation.
No, you're talking about when you were in business for yourself or when you were in life? with Life.
No. Well, Life magazine and all the private enterprise that I worked for, I was always thinking about the day when I'd get into back into my own business, because I was accustomed to working on my own.
Right.
So,
you were like a father. You wanted to have a business.
Yes. So as soon as I could, I moved on to having my own business.
Right.
And to answer your question about my clientele was a wide range of, well, black, white, everybody, but primarily more at that time, whites did not go to black photography studios. But also my studio was the first black studio that opened in Queens.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of it?
Actually, I bought it from an Italian photographer who was there before me. It was Desmond Photographers. But obviously, once I took it over, I had my name on it, Carl McDonald.
Oh, so you've had your name in lights for quite a while.
Yes.
Oh, great. Fantastic. Okay, I see 954-584 with a hand up. And, Carl, do you mind if I open the mic to them? And
not at all. Go ahead.
Okay, so 954-584, your mic is open.
Hello.
Hi, Margaret. Carl, who's this?
This is Carl Bell-Davis.
Hi, Carl. Welcome to the backyard. Haven't heard you for a long time.
It's a long time. I've been trying to get back to you, but the first thing I saw was bad for me. But I know Carl very well. We went to the same school, Michael School.
Yes.
I knew his brother David.
Right.
I knew his father pretty well at his, we used to call him a Tim Smith.
Right.
And also, he was on Slap Road.
Right.
And there was also another famous guy along there. His name was Mr. Sterling. He was a leather worker.
Yes.
And he supplied the belts that we used to get walked out of school with. So the belt was called a Sterling.
Yes.
Well, isn't that wonderful that the backyard is able to bring old friends together?
Yeah, but I know Carl very well.
Isn't that sweet?
Those Michael days were great days.
I think somebody has some background noise.
Michael days were great days, man. We used to have those vendors who were in the schoolyard selling all kinds of goodies to us. There was a snowball man.
Greater cakes.
Selling fruits, greater cakes, tangerines, oranges, and so on.
Yeah.
That was a great time in Michael School. This was in the 40s.
Yes, that's right.
It was in the 40s, absolutely.
It has to be in the 40s, for sure.
Yeah, look, I went to high school in 1949, and I left from Michael and went to KC.
KC, yes.
So it got to be in the 40s.
Right.
Yeah, Michael's days at Michael were fantastic days.
Oh, yes. And, of course, you remember we also had, we participated in some of the track meets and so on.
Yes, that's part of my bringing up in track.
Yeah.
Used to run the race course.
Right.
Yeah, I was a good runner from those days.
Yeah.
And I followed up into my career at KC.
Right. And of course, we've also played soccer.
Oh, football! As soon as we got recess,
we didn't even know that there was any such thing as soccer because we got
soccer is not the right name. The name of the game is football.
Is it football?
Right, because you kick it.
It's a football. America coined a different term to call
it
soccer.
The other one is more socking when they're going to huddle.
The official name of the game
socking.
Is football. Even Spanish is called football.
Yes. Well, thank you.
At recess time, we used to kick a tennis ball.
Yeah, that's right.
We played at recess time. Once I remember my mother loaned my Sunday shoes to wear to school. And I went there and I was kicking football, the tennis ball, and damaged the front of the shoe.
Wow.
Because my mother got worked when I went home.
Well, I hope you didn't get a roast and boil like Carly.
Yeah, that roast boil and everything.
I never heard that one before.
Messing up my son's best shoes.
So I thought that was really cute. Now, I did see 718 with a hand up, and if they want to chime in, please put your hands up again because you have put that apparently you're not online anymore, but oh, there you are. If you guys would hold on, I think 718-565 would like to say something. Good evening. You have Margaret in the backyard. Who do I have?
You've got Nellie. I wanted to tell you that when I was growing up, my mother did tell me about that boat ride they would have every Christmas morning and how it turned over, and that she said she had just reached there to go on this boat ride with my older brother at the time. I guess I wasn't born at the time because I'm old now. But she told me about that boat ride and how it turned over. And every Christmas morning they would have that boat ride. I just wanted to second it that I did hear about it.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I never heard about the boat ride before. This is the first time I was hearing about it. So thank you for verifying that. So we know Mr. Carl know what he's talking about.
Well, sometimes.
And that is a joke. I'm not doubting you at all. So thank you, Miss Nelly, and welcome to the show. All right, Carl, it's back to you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which of us?
Carl, the guest.
Okay.
Oh, Bell Davis. Yeah, that's me here.
Yeah, Bell Davis, yeah.
Yeah, right. It was a wonderful day at Michael's. You remember the gully?
Oh, do I ever? Oh, yes.
We had a paved gully outside the school.
Yeah.
And when rain fall, we used to play a thing called boat horse.
Yes.
And with a little boat sailing down in the water.
Yeah.
Of course, sometimes it rained all day and our clothes got wet. I remember we had to wait the whole day to get our clothes dried off. And when I went to my mother, my clothes were wet and dried. And that triggered another beating again.
And you did it.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, of course. There was no hesitancy about punishment.
Oh, God,
we got the
strap regularly.
Oh yes, and don't forget, even in the school, we
oh Lord,
had,
yes.
There was caning that was done even for the school work had to be the homework
yeah.
had to be done, and if you went to school and you didn't finish the homework,
mm-hmm.
you were in for it.
Oh yeah, but you used to be threatened sometime to get the beating the next day, so
yes.
the boys would wear a bar trunk under their pants, so they wouldn't see the leaks on the bottom.
Ah, so that has helped to soften the blow?
Turn the blow.
Yeah.
I got you. Uh-huh. As usual, you know, Jamaicans are always ahead of the curve. So you were
mm-hmm,
ahead
mm-hmm.
of the curve with eating.
You remember the school garden, Carl?
The school what?
Garden.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
We used to grow tomatoes and okras and all kind of green stuff in our school garden.
Right. Oh, yes. I was very enthused about that because later on, every home that I lived in Jamaica, I always had a garden in the backyard. And I grew all, as a matter of fact, a lot of the vegetables that we had for dinner was grown in my garden.
Of course.
And
of course, every school had a school garden in those days.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Del Davis, thank you for making the connection with Carl.
Okay. It's a pleasure. I call you again soon.
I'd like to tell the listeners that you also did a show for us about Michael.
Yeah.
So it's in the archives, and
mm-hmm.
it's quite interesting. And we would encourage some of perhaps the people who have been to Michael to check it out at
okay.
their convenience.
I call you again, Margaret. I call you again soon.
All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you
for
joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. McDonald.
Yeah, well, I'd like to just recite another one of the gems of wisdom from my mother. And it says, if your lips would keep from slips, five things observe with care. To whom you speak, of whom you speak, how, when, and where.
Very interesting.
And
Do you know what was the origin of those poems, where she got them from?
No.
Did she ever talk about that?
No, I never did know the origins. All I know is that we heard them quite often enough when we required special counseling.
Right, right. And, but they are really precious gems. I know there are lots of them, and I'm planning to launch a new website that I'm going to have a collection of the gems, and wondered if you would submit those, you know, and give credit to your mother.
Yes.
But I want you to move us up now to your, you know, experiences and the success you have had in your career with your passion. Because one of the reasons I want to bring that out is because I know even throughout history, you know, people always believe during that period they're living is not as good as it should be. But always it has been that there were people who were passionate about something and kept striving towards accomplishing or expressing that passion. They would overcome just almost any obstacles.
That's right.
It's happening now. And I sort of believe it's important for us as seniors to sort of pass those stories on, especially if they're personal stories,
to our
children or grandchildren. And I know that when I was growing up, I had enough time to listen to my parents about their lives. And they didn't have the internet. So that's why I'm encouraging the seniors to participate in programs like this or blog or whatever and really leave a legacy for the next generation, whether you have grandchildren or not, because, you know, we can learn a lot from our past, just as now we are recalling the gems and all the lessons that our elders taught us when during that time that we were experiencing this, we didn't really think much of it. Did we?
No, that's true. No, we didn't.
We
no,
just
we
sort
didn't.
Of take it for took it for granted at the time.
That's
so
true.
I just wanted to take the opportunity to do that. But Carl, I'd like you to now share with us, you know, some of the things that have really made your heart sing and what you have been able to accomplish, because I think that as Jamaicans, when we reflect on the period we were born and the support we had from our communities and our forefathers, we really realized how blessed we were.
That's
as
right.
Individuals.
Well, I may continue into my move to the United
States. Yeah, just right ahead because
to the United States.
We're on the clock here.
Yeah, and of course, I became a member of the Professional Photographers of America and a local group.
Here, in New York.
In New York. And
uh-huh.
And the local group, which was the largest photographic group in the country, Long Island Professional Photographers Association. And I served on the board there. And we had a monthly competitions, which I participated in. And that was in one year, I got most of the awards that were given, including the most coveted Court of Honor, the highest award that was ever given by the Professional Photography Society of New York. And one of my photographs was also selected for the permanent loan collection of the Professional Photographers of America. And, of course, it was also an arm of the Photographic Arts and Science Foundation. It's a very unique honor in that there was a very small group that was selected from the local, the New York exhibition and competition. They selected the Blue Ribbon winners from those exhibitions, and then they selected the special loan collection photographs.
And when you say the loan collection, this is a collection that gets lent to different cities or what?
Well, the loan collection is managed by the Professional Photographers of America. They send it all around the country.
The country.
The country.
Oh, gotcha.
It's in the special exhibitions, and also it goes to Europe.
Oh, wow. So what was, do you remember what you photographed that got you the award?
Well, I had a special love for swans, and I had quite a collection of artistic depictions of you know, photographs of the swans, and I had the ballet of the swans was one, a very unique design of two swans in a very interesting design of the two of them floating.
Okay,
in the,
so I'm a sort of dummy here. So when you say design, did you actually photograph the swans in motion? Are you saying that it's how you lay them out on the canvas or whatever you use?
No. What I did in photographing swans is to spend hours at the lake. Wherever
uh-huh.
there was a lake with swans, I was always there.
So
is it actual
swans in motion?
Swans in motion. For example, when they had the expo in Montreal, and there was a lake, an artificial lake that was established, and they had swans there. So that particular picture, I waited until the swans were in a certain position. That gave that special design.
Right, gave this special effect that you captured on camera.
Yes, yes. Then there were others which I captured. I went to Winona Lake.
Uh-huh.
They had a special photographic school, professional school out there, and I went there for several programs of study in color and so on.
Uh-huh.
And because I was an experienced photographer, I was able to take a lot of the studies were, you know, early life for beginners. So
uh-huh.
during those period of time, I would go to the lake and spend again more time. So I have quite an extensive collection of swans.
Oh, that's awesome!
Studies of swans, yeah. One was Ballet of the Swans, and there was also Swan Lake. And there was quite a few with special
and
design.
And you still have those in your possession?
I still have those in my collection, yeah.
Oh, wow, that is great. So when are we going to be invited to a private showing?
Well, to go back to Jamaica a little bit, we also, I had my first and only one-man show at Devon House in Jamaica when I was out there in 1974.
Uh-huh.
And at that show...
And this is when you went back to Jamaica from working and living in New York.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I always had a love to return home.
Uh-huh.
And I spoke with some of the leaders, including Mr. Manley, and they encouraged me to return. So I, in order to have an interesting exhibition, I photographed some of the dignitaries, like, for example, the Governor General and the Mayor of Kingston and the Prime Minister, then was Michael Manley at the time. And I had this show at Devon House, which was opened by our native Governor General, Mr. Campbell, C.C. Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
So in that exhibition, I had a few of my prize-winning swan pictures. I'm going back to that.
Oh, swan pictures that were taken here in the United States.
That were taken here in the United States and Canada, by the way. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So would you say that you prefer to, of doing, you know, people and birds or nature, what is your favorite?
Well, I love nature, but I also did fashion photography, and I had a love generally, but nature was really my number one. I do have also a good collection of landscapes and seascapes taken
wow.
in Jamaica and in Canada and in the United States, and of course there are also some special still life setups where we go for the design more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you've really had a fulfilling career in something that you're passionate about.
Yes, yes.
And that is such a great experience because, you know, so many people that have had a career, but it's not necessarily in the area that they're really have a great passion for.
Right.
So when you're able to do both, it is quite something special.
Yes. I was also, when I was in Jamaica in that year of 1974 to 75, I was also invited to join a select group of photojournalists to cover the Heads of Commonwealth Conference
uh-huh.
in Jamaica, which was presided over by Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II of England, the current Queen of England.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, there was also protocol requirements for photographing the Queen. You couldn't, for example, photograph her with a wine glass in her hand. No, you couldn't. And even if you're nearby, you were not supposed to ask or say anything to her unless she spoke to you first.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're getting some inside stories now
yeah.
about what happens behind the scene when you are in royal company.
Yes.
So go right ahead.
I'll tell you, there was one special...
There's the beans.
Yeah, you know, there was one special incident. The Queen was went to visit the graveside of Norman Manley at the Heroes Circle.
Uh-huh.
And they had the gate that was... There was a fence around the grave. And there was a gate that was padlocked. But it was never opened for quite a few months. And it was all rusted. And there she was, just wandering around by the entrance while they tried to find the key to open the lock. I remember there was the protocol.
Funny, but not funny.
But
didn't anybody think of checking it before the Queen came? Oh,
yeah, and the protocol required, again, that I'm not supposed to be any closer than 15 feet from
uh-huh.
the Queen.
Uh-huh.
And there she was within arm's distance from me, and I'm walking with my camera. Of course, I cannot photograph her so close.
Right.
But there she was. She was just like a friend walking around waiting
Ain't
for them to open
something?
The gate. And I was just right there beside her.
And you kept, you did not take any picture?
No, I could have touched.
I'm sure that
somebody captured the action right there because we were waiting. It was so strange for them to find the key to open the padlock.
Oh, my God, that is a story that I'm sure was never printed in the paper.
No.
And that was 74.
Yeah, that was 74, 75, I think more 75.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it first on Backyard Labyrinth. I know that would make you smile. But I think that is hysterical.
Yeah.
Only in Jamaica.
Yeah.
The Queen has to wait.
That's right.
So they eventually found the key.
Well, actually, I think someone had to break the lock.
Call the locksmith. That is funny. Wow. And I mean, in the days of the paparazzi, I mean, like now, it would matter what anybody say, they would be clipping away.
Oh, yes.
Americans are a lot different.
Of course, with the Queen, you had to get special accreditation to
just
be
to
selected.
Be in the same place with her, I'm
yes,
sure.
Yes. And
so could we caption this as a close encounter?
Of the
unauthorized,
best
but yeah. So that must be some special memories that you have. It was quite an honor.
Oh, yes. And I also... I presented, there was a photograph that I did of the Queen, no, Princess Margaret. The Queen could not attend the Independence Day, celebration of the Independence Day.
The first Independence Day.
Yes, when we lowered the British flag and put up the Jamaican flag.
Uh-huh.
So Princess Margaret represented the Queen and... Bustamante was there because he was the
Prime Minister.
The Prime Minister at that time.
Uh-huh.
And I photographed them walking in to move, to make the switch of the flags.
Ah.
And of course, when we had to meet with her, what they did, they had a special pre-activity with the press men that we could discuss what the protocol, the behavior around her.
Mm-hmm.
So we met her. We shook hands with her. We met all of us who were covering the story of Independence.
Actually, shook hands with her?
Shook hands with her, yes. And met her there.
Wonderful. I know this is really trite, but I noticed how you said the cameramen. Now we have cameramen and camerawomen.
Yes,
that are involved in the.
Well, quite frankly,
but not in those days.
No, it was very rare that you saw.
You know, young people listen to us labrish like this. They don't have a clue. You know, there's just so much has changed in the entire world.
That's right.
You know, so I'm hoping that some of these conversations and hearing about the way things were in the 40s and 50s. They might not seem interesting to them now, but as they get older, because wouldn't you love to have asked your parents certain questions now that you are older and they're gone?
That's right.
Because, you know, I know that now I'm saying, I wonder how my mother and my father met.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I never knew. Did
I've given some thought to that myself.
How did they meet? I'm just curious all of a sudden.
Yes, oh yes.
So here's my suggestion. Because we have gone through all of this and we know that although our children or our grandchildren may seem like, couldn't care less right now. We've been there and done that.
Right.
But wouldn't it be nice if we could use this technology to record the things we think they would like to hear, because it would be based on the things we now know we would like to hear.
Right.
And have it in the clouds, as I say. And I want to just quickly tell the listeners on the board that one of the things that make me all crazy about this that I'm doing is the fact that my mother had left quite a lot, a collection of things that I discovered after she had left the planet.
Right.
And I had them stored in my house. But in 2007, my house burned down.
Wow.
So it all went up in flames. You know, so it's, you know, keeping it, because we have it in the original form it was in, is not the thing to do nowadays. You got to get it photocopied. You got to get things online and in the cloud. And you know, there are ways of keeping everything private. So I think we have, as seniors, we have to get over that if we really want to leave a legacy for the next generation.
Yes, and I really commend you, Margaret, for doing a program of this type where you're going back to the history that we can record and also to reveal, because with all of our study of history and so on, a lot of things were eliminated from our curriculum that would reveal that we had Jamaicans who were achievers and
inventors. Right. Well, part of that is that, you know, the only thing that made the gleaner in those days were important government documentation and, you know, court rulings and things like that. Like the common everyday, what was going on every day was not important. So it didn't get, at the time, so it didn't get into the papers most times.
That's true. That's so true.
And we did not have the technology that we have now. You know, something happened now and in 1 minute, in a second, it can be transmitted to someone in the Sahara Desert or in
That's
the
right.
darkest part of Africa or China. So we live in a totally different world, and I think that the more we get comfortable with it and embrace it, is the more we can use it to our benefit.
And it doesn't require, like, for example, before the personal computer was invented, wherever there were computers, it used to occupy a big room.
Right, right.
And only certain organizations were able to afford.
Right. Now we carry everything in our hands.
Oh, yes.
So we only have a couple of minutes left. So if there's anything you want to bring us up to date with, I'm asking you to do so now. Also, if there's anyone else on the board that would like to say a word to Mr. McDonald or make a comment or add to the labrish, I'm going to ask you to do so in a few minutes. So back to you, Carl.
Yes. Also, I that same photograph, the 50th anniversary image, which we plan to make available to the public.
What are we? Would you like to tell us what you're doing in your community quickly?
Yes. Well, I'm involved with a non-profit organization called the Norman Walton Music Foundation. And as part of our fundraising plans, we plan to promote the availability of that particular photograph of Princess Margaret and Bustamante as they move towards the exchange of the flags. Also, I had the pleasure of presenting that photograph to Prince Philip.
Oh, really?
Yes, at the home of Sir Alexander Bustamante. And I gave it to him personally to give it to Princess Margaret.
Ah.
And they acknowledged the receipt of it from Buckingham Palace.
So perhaps it's hanging somewhere in the palace. You're there.
Yes, but yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. And
wow.
They spoke about its value to them. And as one of the few, at the time, we were one of the few nations that became independent during that period of time.
Right, right, right. Wonderful. Well, I really want to commend you and, you know, congratulate you. And would you mind sharing with us, or is it too private? What year were you born?
I was born in 1931.
Oh, great. Fantastic. That's
way down in November.
Ah, wonderful.
Yeah.
And I mean, a lot of seniors believe they have nothing to contribute, you know, and sometimes we feel like the young people really don't care. But I want to encourage all the seniors to really think about leaving a legacy, to think about, always be willing to help and encourage the next generation, even if it doesn't seem as if it's appreciated. Because, you know, sooner or later, they will wake up. Because I know I had been asleep myself, you know, to things my elders were trying to tell me. And now I wish I was more awake. So yeah. Does anyone, Carl, do you have any parting words?
Yes, I would like, again, another gem of wisdom from my mother in poetic form that is really fits at this time with what the program is doing. And it says, "The lives of great men all remind us that we can make our lives sublime and in parting leave behind us footprints on the sands of time."
Wonderful. I think a lot of the who went to, you know, high school or whatever in Jamaica can really relate to that one.
That particular one, yes. I know it's very well known. Very popular. Yeah.
Well, we're going to be officially off the air that we're not recording, you know, but we can still labrish. And all the calls on the board can now, you won't even be recorded in a couple of seconds. So if you want to interact with Carl or make a comment on the radio or have a message for me or would like to make a suggestion, please hit 1 on your telephone, and that will indicate to me that you would like to participate. Because I say it's like putting up your hand in school, you know, when you want to say something. So feel free to do so, because I'm a little old techie lady here. I have a keyboard in front of me, and I can see the little hands when they go up. So I see we have calls from 914-664. 914-664 again, and the first letter of that number starts with a 33. We have 404-550-973-373-917-411, and a lot more. So if any of you would like to interact with us in the backyard, please hit 1 on your telephone. I also want to ask the listeners online, if you're not on my list and you'd like to know what we're going to do at the next Labrish time, please go to our website, which is www.backyardlabrish.com, and just send me a little note or let me know how you like the show or something. You can even make a suggestion as what you'd like the Labrish to be about. So, Mr. Carr, you are on for a few more minutes, so let's have it.
The pleasure is mine. I thank you for the opportunity to speak about my life. I generally am a very private person. I tend not to really make any waves out there, except I like my work to speak for itself.
No, it can't. It needs a voice.
Yes, but this was a great opportunity and a rare moment for me, because although at the moment part of my activity, I'm a volunteer at the Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, where I'm still a patient, outpatient that is. It's a very important service in that I'm able to give all the patients with my condition, similar condition, the hope that they can survive, because I thought I was going to die in 1995.
Uh-huh.
But
you are a cancer survivor.
I'm a cancer survivor, and I'm very, very, very unusual from stage 4 to still living and doing all things.
Oh, thank God.
Until serving the community.
Ah, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So thanks again, Margaret.
Oh, you're most welcome. It has been my pleasure. And I want to thank all the folks who called in. I want to thank you for being here with us. And I'd like to remind you that we're here each Thursday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And I really would like to get more seniors that would share, you know, things about their lives in Jamaica and wherever they are now, so that the next generation can get a hint of what things were like when we were growing up in Jamaica, you know, how we were governed by our elders, what went on, what was important to us, because there's really not a lot of documentation. The young people now have free range of the internet, they're doing videos, everything that they do, you know, that those who want the world to know about it, the world is finding out about it. But, you know, this did not exist when we were growing up. So if we don't leave some information, people will be making up stories. You know what I mean? Because even now, there are lots of stories being made up about the past. And normally, part of what I do here is use the work of three historians that are doing a wonderful job or have done a wonderful job on documenting people and events that, you know, could be documented. They follow it up with where the information came from at the time they got it. So there are several shows that I've done using Dr. Joy Lumsden, Dr. Rebecca Tortello, and the Encyclopedia of Jamaica by Seymour is the last name. And there's some articles called Pieces of the Past, and also a book that's available through Amazon that is actually put out by the Gleaner Company. And it makes a wonderful gift for, you know, the Jamaicans, as I call the my children that are born here and don't really know a lot about my person or their father's history. So I think because them as well as their children will be using the internet to to research anything, that it's important that we have a collection of stories from our generation that will be there as evidence that we of the things that went on when we were growing up, because a lot has changed now. You know, even how people do things in Jamaica. I remember when I was growing up in Jamaica, I didn't know what, they didn't have festival. When somebody was asking me about festival, I'm saying, oh, perhaps it's what we had at the church festival, like a harvest festival. The first time I heard that, because I wasn't going back and forth to Jamaica, and I really wasn't working in a big Jamaican community, because I came here in 1959.
Yeah.
So I was lost as to what festival was till I discovered it was a food. So, Carl, you didn't know about festival when you were growing up, did you?
No.
Sometimes I wonder if I forget.
No.
We didn't have that.
No,
we
no,
didn't have. Jerk was not popular.
No.
I don't remember that being popular.
No.
You know,
no.
So even the food is different, is what I mean. The language is totally different, because where I could read and perhaps pronounce Louise Bennett's patois, I can't when I try to read what I see a lot of times on the internet. I am totally lost, and it takes me hours to try and pronounce the word, and I usually give up because I can't get it. You know what I mean? It's easier to speak than to write.
That's true, too.
And then everybody writes it different.
Yeah.
And it seems to be mostly the language of the land now. So a lot of the information about what's going on there is done in that sort of language, because that's what I heard or saw when I was abroad. And that's why I'm saying that a lot of things have changed.
Oh, it certainly has.
Yes.
And
so,
I still believe that they are making any effort to... there is no pride in speaking proper English, for that matter.
No. Well, they're taking a pride now in establishing the patois as a language. That's the whole objective, really.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah. So, anyway, you know, I always tell people on Backyard Libraries, we're not talking about what's right or wrong or religion or sex or politics. The whole idea is just to capture what was, as far as our recollection is, of the period that we grew up there.
That's right. Yeah.
So, again, folks, do go to the archives, you know, and if you listen to a show that may be of interest to you and you know someone who may be interested in the same subject, just copy and paste just go to your address bar and copy that, and you can mail it to them, send it to them in their email, and they too can listen to that particular show. But I do thank you for being here, and I hope you'll visit us again in the backyard soon. We're here each week on a Thursday at 8 o'clock. So, Carl, and I'm going to open up the mic to the other Carl now, and again, I see 863386. Your mic is open if you want to say something. Who do I have?
Yes, I'm David McDonald. I'm Carl's brother, and I know all the folk that called in. I'd like to tell him how his parents met. Our parents joined the Seventh-day Adventist Church on North Street by James's Street across from the Catholic Cathedral and near George's High School, and the church wanted to start a branch Sabbath school in a part of, I forget the name of the city, but the road was Regent Street, that a road off North Street on the West End, and they asked my father and mother to go there, but they were not related in any way at that time. My old man, as I called him, was a handsome fellow with my name, of course, but really, we used to call him the white man. And he was the missionary volunteer leader at the time, and our mother, Cicely and Idrina Spence, at the time, was tapped to be the secretary for the Missionary Volunteer Society, what we call today the Adventist Youth Society. And working in such close proximity, I would almost say, naturally fell in love, and they got married there, and then that's how we came about, Adele and Darcy and Carl and David. I was born in 1934, and my young brother Skip, you tell him when he was born, if he ever gets on the line.
That's a beautiful story.
And you know, it's the first time I'm getting that story. I never knew that's how my
it.
How my parents met.
Yes,
God,
you know, asking you like questions to bring out the answers. That is cool. I'm grinning from ear to ear.
Yes, well, we thank Backyard Lavish for that revelation to my brother.
Oh, my gosh, that is so cool. Because remember now, your grandchildren may be able to listen to the show 50 years from this because it will be in the clouds. It will never go away.
In ether, right?
Pardon?
It's an ether sphere.
Right. Isn't that cool? That is wonderful. I wish there was somebody to tell me how my mother and father met.
I never knew this story before. This
is
really amazing.
That is precious.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else on the board with any news flash? Let's hear it. This is wonderful. Well, I really can't appreciate you for coming on.
Before you cut me off, would you allow me to just say
sure.
that I would have liked to speak with Carl Ben-Nevis. He had a brother at school, too. And, you know, we went to America at the same time.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I would have wanted to say something to him, but, you know.
I'm still here.
Carl, Carl, this is David, Carl's brother.
David, I've seen you such a long time. I'd love to get in touch with you.
No, I live in Florida now in a retirement community.
I live in Plantation in Florida.
Oh, yes, I have friends in Plantation, but I haven't been that way for about 18 years now.
Okay.
All right. Well, what I will do, I will set you guys up with the telephone number off the air. How about that?
Okay.
Good, thanks.
This is
that
cool.
Great,
you know,
yes.
This happened a couple of times where we have a guest. They've asked for somebody and called somebody's name, and sure enough, somebody knows that person. So this is really nice, and I really, I'm just giggling like a youngster.
A schoolgirl.
Yes. Well, anybody else would like to? We're not recording, but we're still live. Everybody is still live. So if anyone else would like to touch one on the show, now what you just said might not be recorded because we got off the air at 9:30.
I know, but I wanted to tell Carl how his mother met.
Yes, well, I thank you, David. I really do. I thank you.
That is nice.
Yes, yes.
So you live in Florida, sir?
Yes, I do.
I see. Well, it's nice to meet you, and I'd like you to remember Backyard Lavish and spread the word. And if you would like to be a guest at some time, it would be my pleasure to entertain you. Mr. Carl,
I'm not important enough, but thanks for the offer.
Has been a guest already, and so has his wife. Right, Carl?
Yes, we have. We enjoyed it.
Oh, great.
On twice, and the wife was on twice, too.
Yes. So, again, I want to thank everybody. Mr. Carl McDonald, do you have anything further to say to your brother or anybody else?
No, just keep the faith, David.
I will, Carl.
Well, thank you all. And I'm going to be very southern now because I live in Georgia. So,
yes.
I'm not a Georgia peach. I'm a Georgia prune.
Oh.
I'm going to say.
I prefer to think of you as a Georgia Belle.
Okay, I'm going to ring on out. But I'd like to say thank y'all for being here. And I hope to see you next week when we will be here at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve. Now, everybody has to say Jamaica
land,
Jamaica
land,
love.
And as I say every week, when we sign off, you have the power to make it a great week. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.